Okay, so I want to officially welcome everyone to tonight's teleseminar. The topic is writing personable documentary narration. That's not personal, it's personable, meaning narration that has a little juice to it and that will engage viewers. My name is Karen Everett, and I'm a documentary story consultant. I help filmmakers structure their films, often with narration. We've had so many people register for tonight's call that I'm considering muting everybody. But let me just get a sense of who else is on the call. I know we had a number of filmmakers I talked to before the recording started who are from L.A.
Hi.
Do we have anybody from the East Coast on the call tonight? How about anybody outside the U.S. other than Toronto? And I know folks just getting on may be a bit shy. I did chat with a few filmmakers at the beginning. Would anyone like to introduce themselves?
Hi, this is Chet. Oh, go ahead.
Let's go with the woman and then the gentleman.
Okay. My name is Chelo Alvarez Staley. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Oh, how are you?
Good. I'm in LA, and I'm working on a documentary. Personal documentary, but it's also a social issue, human trafficking.
Fantastic. I can't believe how many L.A. filmmakers are on the call tonight. I must have spoken with four already. That's great. I guess I can believe it. Who else is on the call?
Hi, Karen. It's Mike Hinchy here from Hawaii.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good, good.
How's the weather?
Warm.
It's probably like 2:30 in the afternoon there, right?
It is, yes.
Well, welcome, everybody. You may hear some dings going off, again, as people get on the call. Here's what we'll do. I have a wonderful, I think, tutorial for you guys, and I'm going to go ahead and begin. I'd like to – hi there. Welcome. I'd like to – this tutorial is going to go until 6:15, and then we'll need to end. If we have time at the end for – questions, we'll take some, and at some point I may need to mute folks if there's sort of heavy breathing in the background. I want to give you all my email address, so if you have questions, you can email me. It's Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at new, that's N-E-W, doc, D-O-C, editing, E-D-I-T-I-N-G, .com. And as many of you know, my business is called New Doc Editing, and I help filmmakers figure out how to tell a compelling story with narrative devices, so devices that screenwriters use, like, you know, an inciting incident, a midpoint, and also how to create well-structured topic-based films with devices like a thesis statement, a central question. And we'll talk more about these in terms of narration. Just so you guys know my credentials, who you're listening to tonight, I also teach editing at the top documentary program in the country, according to Documentary Magazine, and that's at the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley. As part of my business, I'm leading a program called the New Doc Inner Circle, which I'll be referring to more in a bit because I'm starting a new one on June 1st, which many of you may be interested in. The Inner Circle is a group of documentary filmmakers who engage in this six-month program to structure their documentaries in a commercially compelling, innovative way. So our aim is to attract finishing funds and eventually large audiences. During the last Inner Circle, we do these monthly mastermind calls, we discussed how to write compelling narration for documentary films, and I'm coming up on my 50th birthday, and on my birthdays I like to give away some gifts, and one of the gifts I thought I'd give was to just share the contents of that with you on the call tonight. So I'll be sharing several tips for how to write great documentary narration. But let me just tell you at the start what my goal for you guys is for tonight's call. Tonight's call can, first of all, if you're not sure whether narration is the right choice for your film. I'm going to help you get clear so you can make a decision about that. And second, if you're already trying or soon will be writing narration, I'm going to give you several strategies, six to be precise, for writing narration and for recording it. You should know that I've helped many filmmakers get their documentaries into top festivals like Sundance, South by Southwest. Most recently, we had a film in Hot Docs in Toronto. It's a film that my company edited. And part of the strategy or the way that we do that is mapping out a clear-cut, engaging structure through narration. Now, I don't think every film is right for narration, but I'll just say at the top, I'm a big fan of narration. I believe it helps the director really author the film, and there are many other benefits which we'll get to. Just so you guys know, I specialize in structuring character-driven documentaries that follow a three-act structure and in essay-style films. So those are films that are organized around ideas about a certain topic rather than a character quest. And sometimes, you know, a film structure, this may be true for yours, requires a hybrid of those two approaches. This was the case with a recent filmmaker I worked with, Tiffany Schlein, her documentary Connected, which premiered in January at Sundance. In that film, we did something very interesting. We used two voices of narration. It was a personal documentary, so there was her own first-person narration and a third-person narration, which was delivered by the actor Peter Coyote. So over the years, I've helped hundreds of filmmakers, and I've noticed an increasing number of them are using narration to effectively convey a personable voice. Now, what do I mean by a personable voice? Well, first, let's examine what a personable voice is not. It's not the kind of, which I imagine many of you have turned your noses up at, the kind of off-putting, omniscient voice of God, usually male voice narration that filmmakers began abandoning, you know, a decade ago. There was a sort of mass movement away from narration. Oh, let's just let the people talk for themselves, because they didn't, it's understandable. You don't want this sort of bodiless authority telling the viewer how to feel. So it's not that kind of, who's a good example of it? Sort of that Walter Cronkite, if you guys are familiar with that voice, or Dan Rather kind of voice that you see in many news magazine so-called documentaries on television. It's not narration that's written for print journalism. Okay, so many well-intentioned, and I've seen this with veteran as well as first-time filmmakers, they kind of default to writing that is better suited for print simply because they don't know any better. So from my observation at festivals like Sundance, I believe narration is making a comeback. It's coming back into fashion. But it looks and sounds different than it did 20 years ago. So if you're considering using narration, let me applaud you. And first point out what narration can do for your film, and then I'm going to give you some tips for actually writing personable narration. The first thing it can do is to convey tone in terms of the voice of the film. So there's the third-person narration that we're all pretty used to. There's first-person narration, which is used in personal documentaries. And I know some of you that I talked to before the recording are making personal documentaries. Here's a little rule of thumb. You want to never open a person – well, I shouldn't say never because I've broken this rule. But in general – avoid opening a documentary, meaning the first minute or two, with the filmmaker's voice, because it stamps the film as not important. Viewers are going to make judgments right away. In the first few seconds, the first thing they notice is not the topic, but how the film is made. And if you start with talking about, you know, my journey and I wanted to, with these first-person pronouns, it can quickly stamp the film as you know, about somebody's eccentric vision, rather than a better way to open a personal documentary might be with sound bites from various characters or experts that speak to the film's larger topic. And then, after the title sequence, that's a good time to come in with the filmmaker's voice. Now, there are exceptions, and if you have a film that blends a personal story with an intellectual essay, you might have two narrators, one the filmmaker and one an actor. As I mentioned, we did this for Tiffany Schlein's film Connected, and it seems to have worked. She actually opened the film with her on-camera, direct-camera address. Her film is doing very well in the world. So it's conceivable, you know, that you could fashion, if you want to get really creative, narration in the second person. So first person is I, first person singular is I. Second person voice is you, which I've actually never seen before. Third person is sort of the generic they or he or she for the singular. I have seen a remarkable twist on the personal voice in the documentary Berkeley in the 60s, which used first person plural. What I mean by this is that the narration, instead of saying I did this, I did that, it said we did this rather than I, to convey a sense of the camaraderie or community of the 60s. So voice. The second function of narration, a little bit of noise in the back. Up, I'll just mute you guys. What does it sound like? Whoever's doing that, can you hear me and stop doing that? Thanks. The second main function of narration, which also can make your film personable, if not downright pleasant, is that narration can be used to lend a mood. It might be a sense of authority. I'm going to go ahead and mute, guys, so hang on just a moment while I do this.
Karen?
I don't know if she knows we can't hear her.
I know.
I think she muted herself.
Hi, guys. Uh-oh. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No, we can't hear you.
Okay. Was there a period there where you could not hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. I'm so sorry. I'm blabbing away. I muted myself. I guess I got the wrong advice from my assistant. That's okay. Anyway, somebody was making noise in the background. It seems to have stopped now. So did you hear me talk about the film Berkeley in the 60s?
Yes.
Great. Okay, so the second function of narration is to lend a sense of mood. So a woman's voice is different than a man's voice, which is different than a child's voice. You know, you might have you might want to create a sense of authority with your mood. You might want to create a sense of something exotic. You might want a sort of warm and fuzzy voice. A British accent in the documentary Nature, for example, is different than Al Gore's slight Tennessee drawl in the film An Inconvenient Truth. Those films are about the natural world, but the mood's different. I was reading online that for some reason British and UK accents seem to be the preferred voice for bird documentaries. and a voice like, say, Morgan Freeman in the theatrical hit March of the Penguins is more friendly and affable than, say, you know, a disembodied British narrator in the Nature documentary series. So without narration, there are other ways to create mood, but narration can certainly help. A third reason to use narration, and this is something that I specialize in, which is to make clear the film's structure. By that I mean either advancing the story or explaining the essay that you are structuring. Now, having said this, ideally the narration follows the story arc rather than leading it. In other words, it's great if your pictures and your sound bites reveal what happens rather than the narration. Assuming you've shot any Verte footage, that doesn't always give all the information you need. So generally in an essay-style film, again, it's a film that's structured around ideas rather than a character's quest, you'll want to use narration to craft your thesis statement or your central question within the first 10 minutes of the film. In Tiffany Schlain's film Connected, for example, we crafted the central question, which was, how can we use our increasing ability to connect through technology to solve global crises? Another example, one of our current Inner Circle members is, she's examining the success of a social experiment in public housing. And she's crafting a central question that asks, who benefits from this social experiment? Who benefited from this experiment in public housing? And so she'll then use narration and also graphics to explore several groups of people affected by the experiment. And she'll use narration to draw her conclusion. I should say they, it's a filmmaking team, and possibly give a call to action. Now, this is a similar model to, I don't know if you guys seen the documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car, which asks a central question and then examines various groups. Narration can help you do that, and it can be very challenging to convey the intricate structure of a film structured around ideas without narration. So that's why so many PBS and topic-based films use narration. Fourth function. I'm going to ask again, if somebody's making noise in the background, if you can hear me. The conference call we're using is very sensitive, and it can really pick up noise. So just for everybody's listening experience, if you could not do that, that would be great. I know it's...
Excuse me, Karen, people can mute themselves.
How do they do that?
Well,
I guess that's star 6, right?
I'm not sure about that. I'm on Skype, so I can...
Who am I talking with right now?
Yeah, this is Cello.
Cello. If you want, Cello, go ahead and hit star 6 and then say something, and I'll
okay.
tell you if I can hear you or not.
Okay, I'll do that.
So can you say something? Okay, we can't hear you, so maybe that's working. So, look, if some of you want to do things while you're listening, I understand we're all busy, feel free, but just go ahead and let's have everybody mute themselves, star 6. And I'm hoping you can all still hear me. Okay, so narration can also be used to establish the film's setting and to give, now this is really important, to give the viewer an idea within the first, say, 2 minutes of the film, what's in store. A good beginning will do that. It'll give the viewer a sense of what they're about to watch. So let me stress that even in the first couple minutes of the film, when it may be too early to pose, say, the film's central thesis question about what the film's going to explore, it's not too early to give the audience a sense of the scope and the direction of the film. So an example would be the Oscar-nominated documentary Long Night's Journey into Day. That film uses opening title cards. And by the way, that's a type of narration. It's just that the words, the exposition, is on screen in text rather than voiceover. So the title cards explain that South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission was set up to allow people to apply for amnesty. And then one of the closing lines of narration says something like, here are four of those stories. So it gives the viewer a sense of what is in store. Another example, this is from the documentary Cadillac Desert by PBS producer and UC Berkeley professor John Elf. Let me read to you a few of the film's opening lines of narration. As I read this, note how descriptive and dramatic the writing is. So this is a film about water shortage. This river, the Colorado, can be turned on and turned off down to the last drop on orders from the Interior Secretary of the United States. This was the first river on Earth to come under complete human control. the only real river in 1,000 miles of desert, so hot and dry that men have died from thirst within sight of its banks. Very descriptive, isn't it? Now, here's the point I'm going to make is in the next two lines of narration. Today, 30 million people depend on the waters of the Colorado. This is the story of how that came to be. So the narration is letting the audience know basically what they're about to see. Very important function to orient the viewer. Otherwise, viewers, if they feel the film is pointless and meandering, they're going to lose interest. Next function, to make transitions from one idea to another. This is, again, is especially true in essay-style documentaries in which you frequently need to transition from one idea supporting your central thesis to another idea. Another of our Inner Circle members' films, for example, this film is a personal documentary. It uses first-person narration. And the narration is used to transition from one proposal to revolutionize our economy to examining another proposal. Now, you should know I'm actually slightly disguising these film topics to preserve their anonymity, but I hope you get the point. Now, keep in mind that you can also use graphics to help with transitions. Narration, graphics, and music are three of your best friends when you're crafting transitions from one topic to another. Two more. I want to give you two more functions. I'm trying to sell you guys on narration. I think it's underrated. One is that narration can be used to clarify confusing points, and it can do it very efficiently, even to the point, for example, of collapsing several long-winded sound bites into two or three sentences of succinctly written narration. Explaining narration is much, I should say, explaining through narration is much, much faster than explaining through sound bites. So it allows you to get to the point quickly, without taking up a lot of screen time, and to clarify. And then finally, narration can be used to provide emphasis. In Tiffany's film, Connected, for example, we rephrased the central question and repeated it probably 5 times through the film's 88 minutes. It kept her central question top of mind. So you can use narration to emphasize and direct your viewer's awareness. So I hope I've sold you guys on the power of narration. Like I said, narration is becoming more popular. It's making a comeback. Directors are using it more to creatively court the audience because it's more personable than it used to be. Now, I'm going to share with you guys in a moment 6 strategies for writing great personable narration. But before I do that, I want to let you know a little bit, just take a couple minutes to tell you about the New Doc Inner Circle that I conduct and where to find more information about it. And I'm going to be giving you guys a special discount at the end of the call if you're interested. The next New Doc Inner Circle begins June 1st. It's a 6-month coaching program, limited, I cap it at no more than 5 qualified members because I want to provide a great experience. And its purpose is to help you structure your film with my one-on-one story consultations and with peer support. This will be our 3rd one. Filmmakers have raved about the program, and you can find their testimonials on my website, so you don't have to take my word for this. Why might you need this program? You might need it if you're having trouble finding your story or your film structure, and you want guidance on how to edit your film. You might also need this program if you're having trouble staying focused with everything else you have to do in your life, or if you're feeling a little isolated and want the company and support of fellow filmmakers. So if you have a pen or if you're online, I want to give you a URL right now. It's kind of a secret URL because it's not accessible from my website. So please write this down. Again, if you're online, you can go there and bookmark it. For those of you who are interested in getting a jump on this, I urge you to check it out after the call. Again, I'm only taking 5 filmmakers. So here it is, newdoc.editing.com/land, that's L-A-N-D, like land on this page, / inner circle, and that's one word, no hyphen. And over the course of the 6 months, here's what you get. First of all, you get 3 in-depth story consultations with me at a substantial savings, a $2,000 savings over my story consulting fees. So that's on 3 different cuts of your film. You'll also, I use this special tool. It's called the Viewer POV Movie. It basically allows you to, it's a special software on my computer, and I use my computer's camera, so that what you get back is a QuickTime file of your movie playing, and then in the corner, the upper right-hand corner, there's a little image of me watching and reacting to your film. And it allows me to give you very detailed feedback on what's working, what's not working, you know, for each shot, soundbite, in a way that's recorded so you can go back to it. You also get 7 pages of written notes for each consultation, a doc plot map, and we do a 75-minute recorded phone consultation to collaborate together on your film structure. You also get peer support from other filmmakers and coaching from me in 6 monthly mastermind calls where we'll report on our progress, troubleshoot problems ranging from how to write narration to, you know, how to structure your film to editing music. You'll get an accountability partner, which has worked out really well, someone that you'll set up weekly phone calls with. You get unlimited email support from me, and you'll also get a complimentary copy of all my online seminars, including the Ultimate Guide to Structuring Your Documentary, Editing the Character-Driven Documentary, and the Story Doctoring Kit. There's a lot more. I won't take the time to get into it here. Again, the webpage is newdocediting.com/land/innercircle. Feel free to email me if you have any questions about that. Now, back to writing narration. Here are 6 tips. The first would be to write to picture. In other words, make reference in your narration to what is being seen on screen, but avoid the so-called say-cow-see-cow syndrome. I don't know if you guys have heard of that before, but what it means is if you're showing us a cow, don't say this is a cow. The narration should add information to the picture, not simply describe it. So you might say something like, you know, cows like this aren't bred for milk. So you're referring to the picture, but you're adding information that's not evident from the visuals. The second tip would be to make sure you're using the active voice. By active voice, you may recall from your high school or college English classes, the passive sentence structure is when something's being done to you or to someone. So you want to avoid passive sentence structure. In the previous example about cows, I purposely used the passive voice so you guys could give you guys a chance to correct it. So cows like this aren't bred for milk. Anybody want to venture to say what the active voice might sound like if you were to revise that sentence?
We don't breed these cows for milk.
We can't breed these cows for milk?
Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I just realized you're probably one of the few people who aren't muted, so maybe other people tried to respond. Well, that actually is still using the term bred for. So whoever's breeding is missing from the sentence. So the active way might, you'd have to actually add a noun in there. It would be farmers breed cows like this for beef, not milk. Do you see the difference? Cows are bred or farmers breed cows. So cows are bred. It's considered kind of passive. It doesn't move with that sort of noun, verb, object sentence structure. So once you've had a pass at your narration, go back and just check that everything is in the active voice and try to also avoid the to-be sentence construction using words like is and are, you know, this cow is black, or, you know, these cows are, you know, bred for beef. Oops, I used the passive voice, but you get the point. Third point is to use short sentences. Use short sentences. Most people writing for print you know, use elegant and long sentences with several clauses. So state your information in really simple language. Say it in a language that an eighth grader can understand. Show your rough cut, you know, with your scratch narration to everyday people. Find out what's confusing. And then, you know, avoid using jargon, technical jargon. If you have to use it, explain what it means. And in terms of using short sentences, it's okay to use sentence fragments. You wouldn't see them in a newspaper print, but it's okay to use just parts of sentences, okay? Like this. Just like this, just like I'm talking now, like everyday people talk, no verbs. So that's okay to use. And along these lines, you want to kind of avoid the use of excess modifiers like adjectives and adverbs. Stick to nouns and verbs. Again, writing for TV or film is very different than writing for print. Our journalism students at UC Berkeley, and these are graduate students, they learn very quickly that writing for film is very conversational, colloquial, even off the cuff. And the way they've been trained to write, it doesn't fly on camera. So remember to speak or write conversationally. Remember that every line is only going to be heard once. The viewer can't go back and reread it, which is another reason to keep your sentences short. Every syllable you take out allows the film to breathe. Now, you know, letting a film breathe is very important. This teleseminar is not an example of allowing discourse to breathe. I'm kind of barreling through this information because I need to finish in 10 minutes, and I will. But, you know, allowing your film to breathe it means keeping your narration to a minimum. Fourth point, avoid creating the false impression that the audience is seeing the real thing, you know, if they're not. So, for example, let's say on screen we see President Obama signing a bill, and you imply in your narration that, or you may state in your narration, he's signing the dismantlement of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So for that scene, you can't use footage in which he's actually signing a bill that extends unemployment benefits. It has to be the real deal. John Els calls this the genuine article. So the veracity, the truth of a scene, is particularly important in documentaries in general, but especially in historical documentaries. Now, two more points here. These last two are very important. You want to convey only the story points and the information needed to get to the next material, whether that's a soundbite or verite footage. And you want to only use enough narration to answer the question, does the audience need to know this? It's what is referred to it. You may have heard this before, referred to as the need to know test. And you want to apply that to every line of narration you write. Just go back and say, does the audience need to know this? Does the audience need to know this? A related point is to apply the need to know test particularly to things like proper names for people and places and to dates. Does the audience really need to know the name of this person? Do they really need to know the name of this park? I recently finished story consulting on a historical film about the Renaissance, famed at PBS, and I would say that 50% of the names of people and places, as well as dates, were not needed, and I suggested the director cut them, and he did. And I suggested many of them were in foreign languages, like French and Italian, which made it even more challenging for the audience to have to kind of decipher and hold in their head all of that, you know, foreign information, assuming they didn't speak those languages. So viewers can get easily overloaded. And of course, the main problem is that then they miss the main point of the sentence. So don't dilute or bog down your sentences with a lot of unnecessary information. You kind of want to clarify things in the barest sense. You know, just say what happened. Okay, final point here is a tip about using numbers. They don't always work. Big numbers may have no meaning to viewers. It's much better to use comparisons. It's more personable. I was recently looking at the documentary, I believe this was nominated for an Academy Award, No End in Sight. It's about the Iraq War. In the beginning of that film, even this very, very well-made film, there were a lot of numbers thrown around, say, in the first 10 minutes. And the result was a little bit mind-numbing, at least to this viewer. So numbers like, you know, death tolls of 600,000, 20,000 Americans wounded, Baghdad, a city of 6 million. So, for example, rather than tell the audience how many people live in Baghdad, you can convey a sense of the population, at least for a U.S. audience, not with numbers, but in a phrase like, Baghdad, a city twice the size of Chicago. See how it's using a comparison? Another example, instead of saying that healthcare costs $253 billion in 1980 and now costs more than $2.3 trillion, well, consider using a simple numerical comparison that a viewer can wrap her head around. For example, healthcare today costs 8 times more than it did 30 years ago. 8 times more than it did just 30 years ago, something like that. And a final example from, this is a film I mentioned before, Cadillac Desert, uses the line, here it rains 3 inches a year, about the same as in Egypt. So you notice how that kind of evokes a very vivid picture, rather than just it rains 3 inches a year. Well, what the hell does that mean? It also used a very, did you notice how short the line was? It's a good line of narration. You'll have to do a little research to come up with those comparisons, but you know, the one about Baghdad and the one that I mentioned about healthcare, I found those on the web in just 2 minutes of research. So take the time to do that. You can also ask your film's experts for some meaningful comparisons as well. It will really elevate the quality of your narration. A great source of more information about writing narration is Sheila Curran Bernard's book, Documentary Storytelling. You may have heard of it. There's also my own book, which sells for $27. It's called Documentary Editing. If you would like to get it for free, just email me and I'll get it to you. And now let me just in closing say a couple words about the process of creating narration. Most important thing you should know, especially for those of you who may have writer's block, is you don't have to get your narration right the first time that you write it. So you just have to get it going, and then it's going to take several drafts. Sometimes you can have someone interview you, and we're doing this with some of our Inner Circle members who are making personal documentaries. We're going to use that voiceover as narration. It's going to sound much more emotional and conversational and, you know, full of the right inflection and emphasis. And even if you don't want to use that exact audio, you could transcribe the interview and at least find the key points that you want to more carefully craft by writing the narration. So the point here is I just want to convey, you just got to make a start. Just dive in. It's often easier to rewrite a draft than it is to get that first draft on paper. When you think you've got your lines, say your lines out loud to make sure they're conversational. You'll be using what's called scratch narration right up until locked picture, which is every frame of video is in place. And then the final narration will be timed to the locked picture. A couple tips about the process, that process kind of at the very end there. And I learned this from one of my mentors, John Elf. First of all, a warning about the pitfalls of using an amateur narrator to deliver your narration. You know, audiences are much more forgiving about other clunky elements of your film, like, you know, shaky footage or an interview that's slightly out of focus. But they're much less forgiving about audio in general and in particular about narration. So you want to stamp your film as amateurish. Go for find a professional narrator. I encourage you to go for the biggest name you can. It doesn't have to be an actor. But, you know, I go for the big guns. Sometimes the only thing to keep in mind there is you know, depending on what kind of POV your film has and the mood you want to shape. Somebody like Martin Sheen, for example, who narrated Who Killed the Electric Car, or somebody like Robert Redford, who narrated a documentary about Yosemite, or Susan Sarandon, even though all of these are big names, they're all kind of left-leaning, they're not as politically charged as, say, you know, the late actor and President Ronald Reagan. So don't turn your audience off with somebody who's too much on the fringe. The second point here is just to let you know that writing narration is labor intensive. It's labor intensive. I want you to have that expectation going in. So here's a kind of ballpark figure for a narration heavy film, like a 1 hour documentary that you might see on PBS or HBO or BBC. It takes a good month, you know, 20 to 30 business days to complete just the narration from start to finish. And this came from John Els, who produced several documentaries from PBS. That includes the research, the writing, the reviewing, the fact-checking, and the actual recording. So keep that in mind, and you'll have the right expectations. I hope that you guys have found this narration tutorial helpful. It's 6:15, so I'm sorry we don't have time for questions. I want to honor all of your time commitments. Remember, you can email me if you have questions, Karen@newdocediting.com. And remember also, I mentioned at the top of the call, if you're interested in the Inner Circle, I want to give you guys a discount. I'm going to give you a 10% discount. So email me within the next 24 hours if you're interested in that. We'll arrange a time to talk if you want to find out more about it. Again, that hidden secret webpage is newdocediting.com/land, /inner circle. And as an Inner Circle member, you'll receive a lot of guidance writing narration and telling your story, not only figuring out the structure, but in a stylistically innovative way. So with that, I'll say goodnight, everybody. I hope you're all very brave making documentaries. I admire you, and if there's anything I can do to support you, it's one of the reasons I'm on the planet, so don't be afraid to contact me. Okay? Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night. You're very welcome. Bye-bye.